Frank Muir goes into hobbies and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
A fisherman invited a friend round for a rather special meal and couldn't resist boasting about the main course. "Do you know," he said, "I fought for an hour with that salmon." "Yes," said his friend. "Why, somebody can't design an efficient tin opener, I don't know." I say, come here. Would you come this way? Look, I must show you this. It's the pride of my collection.
It's lovely.
A globe of 16th century manufacture. Gold, was it?
Yes.
In gold. And with the countries picked out in diamonds. You see that? And the trade routes picked out in silver. Now then, what do you think?
It's incredible. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Yes.
Is it genuine?
Well, if it isn't, I've been done for £2. What do you call a person who collects money?
Well, I call him a numismatist.
No, it's a rent man. Excuse me, Mr. Clemmer, sir. I got a snap here of a young son, you see. Uh-huh. It's a very old snap, because he's quite a big boy, don't you? Uh-huh. Now, I understand you do some retouching, is that right?
Yes.
You can alter it, can you, though? But he's wearing a school blazer, you see. Now, do you think you can alter it to look like an ordinary jacket? Can you do that?
Yes, I think you can do that.
Oh, good boy. And he's wearing the school tie, you see. Now, I don't want a school tie, because I want to be a plain tie. Can you do that for me?
Yes, I think you can.
You retouch it, do you? Yes. All right. And look, you see that school cap. Can you take the cap off?
Yes.
Oh, thank you very much, indeed.
Tell me, which side does your son part his hair?
Well, you'll see that when you take his cap off. Two rather simple types hired a boat at the seaside one day and went fishing. They had very good luck and caught lots of fish. "This is a good place," said one. "It'd be good to have another go tomorrow, but we'll never find it again." "Don't worry," said the other. "I've marked the side of the boat with a cross." "That's no good," said his friend. "We may not get the same boat tomorrow."
The trouble with investigating the humour of hobbies is that you're bound to leave a lot of them out. There are so many hobbies, and each one is all important to its devotees. So I must apologise if your particular fancy is not mentioned in this programme. So bad luck, cigarette card collectors, traction engine spotters, manhole cover fanciers, and all of you who are currently making matchstick models of Liverpool Street Station. Actually, those whose hobbies are not mentioned may be glad of it. Because a hobby is a consuming passion, and for some, even to look for humour in their passion is sacrilege. A hobby is a very personal thing. The derivation of the word's interesting. It comes from hobby horse, and riding a hobby horse is something which involves no one else. Lawrence Stern.
So long as a man rides his hobby horse peaceably and quietly along the King's Highway, neither compels you or me to get up behind him, pray, sir, what have either you or I to do with it?
Yes, it's a private bee in the bonnet is a hobby, and a very popular thing. Sir Matthew Hale in the 17th century.
Almost every person has some hobby horse or other.
And it's a fancy that must be indulged by other people. Sir Walter Scott.
I quarrel with no man's hobby.
And its obsessive force is something that's peculiarly English. George Santayana.
England is the paradise of individuality, eccentricity, heresy, anomalies, hobbies, and humours.
People need hobbies to broaden their horizons, to make them feel that life isn't just one continual round of work day after day. A hobby opens another window on life, and having another outlet can help in one's main work. Ben Johnson.
Ease and relaxation are profitable to all studies. The mind is like a bow, the stronger by being unbent.
It's important for everybody to unbend. Not only gardeners and deep sea divers. For some people, a hobby begins as a conscious effort. Reading the first book on the subject is done with diffidence. It's after that the obsession builds. Collectors begin in an amateur way before they become aficionados. Consider the business of accumulating antiques.
You must excuse my hands, but I've just been stripping a tall boy.
Do you mind if I just nose around?
Oh, no. I was going to say, can I help you? But I don't think I can. I think you know exactly what you're looking for. It's lovely, isn't it?
Yes, well, actually, I was looking for something rather along the lines of a teapot stand. Oh. It's a birthday present for my wife. Uh-huh. I bought her a teapot for Christmas, and so I thought I'd follow it up with a teapot stand.
Oh. Last of the big spenders. You could stand the teapot on here very nicely.
Yes, but it's a little bit bigger than what I had in mind, really.
It is big. But only an expert would have spotted it. If you'd be advised, you can't go wrong with these, you know. Because these are going to rocket. The Americans are buying them up, you know. If you had 6 or 7 of those tucked away, you'd never starve. I mean, you wouldn't have room to eat, but you'd never starve.
This is nice.
Oh, I can see I'm going to have to watch you. You really have the eye, don't you? Can you keep a secret?
What?
Wedgwood.
But I thought Wedgwood only did pottery.
That's the secret. It's a very unique piece. There's only one other in existence, and it's on trust for the nation. It's £55, and if you pass that up, you want your bottom smacked.
Alan Bennett with John Sargent. Most antique dealers start off as amateurs. The hobby becomes a profession. But when he gives up the profession, he can keep up the hobby. A Freudian misprint from a newspaper's gossip column.
I did not see Mr. M at the antique dealer's fair last week, and later I heard he's retired from the business and is faking things quietly at home.
One of the more profitable hobbies. Collecting can be a rather passive business, though. There are a lot of people who prefer to burn up their leisure hours in more active pursuits. For many, a hobby is a chance to take on another role, to do on an amateur level, while others do professionally. This is certainly true of amateur dramatic enthusiasts and amateur musicians. They all have the excitement of the real thing without the pressure of careers depending on it. And they get the thrill of press cuttings from local papers to cherish in their scrapbook.
Mr. Wilkinson's performance as the prince never let us forget what a difficult play Hamlet is.
In the banquet scene, Emily Pritchard as Lady Macbeth really made a meal of the role.
Ibsen's play is finely balanced on a knife edge between comedy and tragedy, but the Walton young players managed to pull it off.
Then there's music from a Surrey paper.
Miss Mary Salter rendered 3 vocal solos and a return to orchestral music was greatly appreciated.
Or from the Lincolnshire one.
Miss Tompkins is again the honorary conductor, and so long as this popular and talented lady holds the reins of the choral society, there need be no fear of success.
The trouble with that kind of club or society is that it tends to get bogged down in all kinds of administrative wrangles. All the little points of management that are dealt with by the inevitable committee.
Well, as you all know, this is another special meeting of the Ladies' Choral to talk about the forthcoming festival and inter-county choral competition. And we all know the date, and we all know the set song. Yes, we do, my dear. It's in 2 parts for ladies' voices in E flat. My bosom is a nest. But of course, what we are really here for tonight is to talk about this question of voices in the choir. Now, we don't want any unpleasantness. Friendly is what we are, and friendly is how we are going to go on. But there is just this one voice among the altos that did not ought to be there. And I think we all know to what I am referring. Now, I don't want anybody to think that I don't like Mrs. Codlin, because I do. Oh, yes, she's a nice woman. A regular churchgoer, yes, and most generous donator to the funds. Yes, and a lovely neighbour. She'd lend you anything. But she just has this one fault. She does not blend. You see, it's not as if Mrs. Codlin had a voice that you could ignore. No, you could hear it over everything. Yes, over the piano. Oh, over the sopranos. You can hear it right down the road. Do you know, at practice the other evening, Mrs. Codlin was standing between Mrs. Brill and me, wasn't she, Mrs. Brill? And we'd just been doing, what was it, the wild brown bee is my lover. Turned to Mrs. Codlin, you know, very casual, thinking she might like to take the hint. I said, I wonder whose voice it is that stands out so among the altos. And she said she hadn't noticed. Hadn't noticed? Mrs. Brill told me later, didn't she, dear? Mrs. Brill said to me, the vibrations were so considerable that they made her chest hum. No, I don't think she does do it on purpose. But of course she ought not to have been letting... Oh, it's ridiculous, I mean. The whole thing's a nonsense. But then, of course, you see, it was her idea. I mean, Mrs. Codlin founded the choir.
Joyce Grenfell. Infuriating, though, all that committee business can be, it often makes valuable decisions for the society involved. A report from the Old News Chronicle.
Women in the Essex village of Ugly have changed the name of their organisation from the Ugly Women's Institute to the Women's Institute Ugly Branch.
That's better. Societies like the Women's Institutes are very useful centres for hobbies, flower arranging, cookery, needlework and other pursuits, as revealed in the Stourbridge edition of the County Express.
In the handicraft exhibition at Wordsley Community Centre, the contribution of the Mrs. Smith was smocking and rugs, and not, as stated in last week's report, smoking drugs.
Some hobbies can be indulged by members of both sexes, but a lot are restricted to either one or the other. Obsessive interest in forms of transport is, on the whole, a masculine hobby. Kenneth Graham's Mr. Toad is a good example of the sort of enthusiast with his wild crazes to own a caravan and a car. This kind of character always wants the latest in locomotion. It's very nice for those who have the money to indulge whims of this sort, like Hilaire Belloc's Lord Hybo.
Lord Hybo, getting tired of trains, would binge about in aeroplanes, a habit which would not have got him into trouble had he not neglected what we know to be the rule of common courtesy. Past bedroom windows he would sail, and with a most offensive hail, disturb the privacy of those about to wash or change their clothes.
But the poor enthusiast can also devote all his time to his car. Tinkering with engines is a totally obsessive hobby. Now, its adherents fall into two groups. Those who work endlessly in garages, rebuilding ancient motors they respect too much ever to use, and those who can't wait to get on the roads in an old banger, tarted up with a positive acne of spotlights, 10-foot radio aerial, and a checkered strip along the bottom of the door bearing the car's make. That's for passers-by who can't recognize a model under its layers of matte paint and chrome. For both these enthusiasts, the car is everything. They spend all their money on accessories, tools, and all the time they're not actually under the car is devoted to searching motoring magazines for the latest knick-knack.
Something new which no motorist should be without. We offer you the self-grip wench.
Adjustable, do you think? It's possible to have a... Or monkey. It's possible to have a useful hobby. Something that does a bit of good while it entertains you. Gardening, for instance, is a good example of this. Though it remains a terrible chore for many, the real fanatic can spend all his time at it. Like most majority hobbies, it's very well documented. There are lots of books, magazines and catalogues around. There's a chance for enthusiasts to discuss methods through the press. Here's a testimonial from a seedsman's catalogue.
I'm very pleased with the lot of seeds I got from you recently. Every one nearly came up.
Rather an interesting gardening story from a letter in the People.
At a neighbour's suggestion, I tied old sacking around the base of my apple tree to trap insects. The first time I moved it, I found hundreds of earwigs. Just as I was about to destroy them, I remembered reading that earwigs are devoted mothers, risking anything to protect their young. I replaced the sacking without killing one. Needless to say, there isn't an apple fit to eat.
That particular kind of sensibility isn't shared by devotees of another popular hobby, fishing. This is really the classic hobby, totally introverted, totally absorbing to those who like it, and totally pointless to those who don't. There's really no argument about fishing, since there's absolutely no common ground between those who like it and those who hate it. There have been critics, such as Dr. Johnson.
A fishing rod is a stick with a hook at one end and a fool at the other.
Don Marquis.
Fishing is a delusion entirely surrounded by liars in old clothes.
The fisherman's entirely unaffected by that kind of talk. His eyes can only see his float, while his mind reaches out to thoughts of a monster pike, a giant salmon, or some impossible bream. Success or failure doesn't matter. The possibility of a record-breaking fish is always there. The fisherman angles on, impervious to rational arguments like this one from Mark Twain.
There's no use in walking 5 miles to fish when you can depend on being just as unsuccessful near home.
Fishing's another well-documented hobby. There are lots of papers and magazines full of photographs of chaps holding up enormous fish. And there are reports on the angling scene. Here's one from an Aldershot paper.
I saw him land at least 5 big Dacen roach. They expressed their admiration of the water and of the Farnham Angling Society.
One from the Angler's News.
During the morning, I wandered round the lake taking photographs, and while doing this, fell in with Mr. L.R. Singer, who was fishing. A discussion on tactics ensued.
Fishing has its own language. We probably could have heard a bit from Mr. L.R. Singer, but two anglers can converse for hours about multipliers, swim feeders, paternosters, snap tackle, swing tips, and leave the layman dazed and bewildered. This sort of thing gives fellow enthusiasts a snobbish exclusivity. It's the same with any hobby which has its own private language. Take high fidelity, for example.
I had a little gravophone. I'd wind it round and round. And with a sharpish needle, it made a cheerful sound. And when they amplified it, it was much louder then. And you sharpened fiber needles to make it soft again. Today for reproduction, I'm as eager as can be. Count me among the faithful fans of high fidelity. High fidelity. Hi-fi's the thing for me. With an LP disc and an FM set and a quarter reflex cabinet. High frequency range, complete with auto change. All the highest notes, neither sharp nor flat. The ear can't hear as high as that. Still, I ought to please any passing bat with my... Who made this circuit up for you anyway? You bought it in a shop. Ooh, what a terrible job. You've got your negative feedback coupled in with your push-pull input-output. Take that across through your redhead pickup to your tweeter. If you're modding more than 8, you're going to get wow on your top. You try to bring that down through your rumble filter to your woofer. What'll you get? Flutter on your bottom. High fidelity, FFRR for me. I've an opera here that you shan't escape. On miles and miles of recorded tape. High decibel gain is easy to obtain. With a tone control at a single touch, I can make Caruso sound like Hutch. Then I never did care for music much. It's a high fidelity.
Michael Flanders and Donald Swan, pointing out that the attraction of hi-fi is not playing records or tapes, but fiddling about the bits of equipment. In fact, listening to records hardly counts as a hobby. Being entertained is too passive to qualify, unless, of course, you do something while being entertained. Letter from a lady in the old Daily Herald.
I do not like wasting time when I watch TV on my own. I like to do something else at the same time. I do foot, finger and eye exercises. I shrug my shoulders and roll my head round and round. During the Wimbledon tournament, whenever the players changed ends, I went down on my back to do a few tummy exercises and circled my legs round in the air.
She must have looked as though she'd been sprayed with a people aerosol. With radio and television, they really only become hobbies when you do them yourselves. You know, build up the equipment and then use it. That's a real hobby, to be a radio ham.
Now then, where's me valves? Oh, you little beauties. We'll soon have you fixed in. We'll soon have the watts throbbing through you and your filaments growing red hot. Carrying the thoughts and words of mankind to the four corners of the world. Oh, there's nothing like a DS19-87B radio valve. Look at you, look at you, look at you, look at you. A triumph of technological engineering. A work of art. They can keep their Sistine Chapels. Give me the inside of a wireless set any day. I bet they're wondering the world ever why I've been silent the last few nights. A radio station like me, forced off the air for the sake of 15 bob, it's ridiculous. Dear, oh dear, seems ages since I had a good old natter with old Yokosuji in Tokyo. I wonder how his wife is. What was her name? Radiant Flower of the Divine Heavens. One of her feet are still playing her up. Well, I'm miles beyond my transmissions. Who was it who picked me up last week now? Oh, yes. Rodriguez Dominguin, Rio de Janeiro. I better give him a call tonight. I promised to let him know who won the Daily Herald brass band competition. Ah, it's a marvellous invention, radio is. I don't know what I'd do without it. I go crackers. It's the best 500 quid's worth I've ever spent. It's opened up completely new horizons for me. Friends all over the world. All over the world. None in this country, but all over the world. Well, well, ho, 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 boom, 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 10 o'clock. Time I went in the air. This is GLK London transmitting on the shortwave band on 10.4 metres at a frequency of 250 megacycles per second. This is GLK London calling HB24D Tokyo area. GLK London calling HB24D Tokyo. Come in, Tokyo. Hello, hello. HB24D Tokyo. Yoki, how are you? No. How are you? No. How are you? How are you? How... This London GLK, how getting are you? Oh, never mind, no. How's the weather out there? No, what is the weather like? No, is it raining? Raining. Pitter-patter, water. Water, wet, ooh, nasty, yes. Hello. Yes, listening, go ahead. What, sorry, what was that? Yes, I can hear. No, understand. I cannot understand. No comprendi. Say it slowly. Slow. Can you put it another way? In English, fool. Slowly now. Yes. It is our raining not. Oh, good. Very good, yes. Yes, it is our raining not here also. Yes. God, this is hard work. Well, what have you been getting up to then? Yes. Getting up to... No. Not when are you getting up. Getting up to... What What have you been doing? Doing? You. You. What have you been doing? What have you... No. What time is it over there? Time, o'clock. Big hand, little hand. Whereabouts? I know it's not raining, you told me. Start again. Here in London, 10 o'clock. What time in Tokyo? What time... This is GLK London signing off. Yes, goodbye, Toki. Yes, it's been very nice. Yes, same time Monday. Eh? Yes, oh yes, sayonara. Ah, it's marvellous to be able to converse with people all over the world. People different to yourself with something new to say broadens your outlook. Increases your knowledge of things. I bet there's not many people around here who know it's not raining in Tokyo.
Tony Hancock, let's finish our look at hobbies with a cautionary limerick by A.G. Price-Jones entitled Tragic Hobby.
An artist who lived at St. Ives collected quaint African knives, but his children all thought they were bought for their sport. Out of eight, only one now survives.
From Alfred Marx and me, goodbye.
Bye.
Frank Muir Goes Into Hobbies was produced by Simon Brett and Bob Oliver Rogers.
I saw him in the corner shop, buying bolts of wood and glue, asking the assistant for model kit number two. Then happy as a sandman, running to his hobby room, high above the pretty people, busy making friends, busy making friends. He can build aeroplanes, make little wooden trains. That's the life he understands. His scene is a shell that is made by himself, for he's very good with his hands. He's very good, very, very good, very good with his hands. There's no need to laugh when you see him, 'cause he's very good with his hands. He's very good, very, very good, very good with his hands.